ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। कालकन्यापि बुभुजे पुराञ्जनपुरं बलात् यया विभूतः पुरुषाः सद्यो निःसारतामियात्। कालकन्यापि बुभुजे। ट्रान्स्लेशन्: ग्रेजुअली Kalakanya, with the help of dangerous soldiers, attacked all the inhabitants of Puranjana's city, and thus rendered them useless for all purposes. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, Founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, Savior of the World, Our Life and Soul. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. At the fag end of life, when the infelicity of old age attacks a man, his body becomes useless for all purposes. Therefore, Vedic training dictates that when a man is in his boyhood, he should be trained in the process of brahmacharya. That is, he should be completely engaged in the service of the Lord and should not in any way associate with women. When the boy becomes a young man, he marries between the ages of 20 and 25. When he is married at the right age, he can immediately beget strong, healthy sons. Now, female descendants are increasing because young men are very weak sexually. A male child will be born if the husband is sexually stronger than the wife. But if the female is stronger, a female child will be born. Thus, it is essential to practice the system of brahmacharya. If one wishes to beget a male child when one is married. When one reaches the age of 50, he should give up family life. At that time, one's child should be grown up so that the father can leave the family responsibilities to him. The husband and wife may then go abroad to live a retired life and travel to different places of pilgrimage. When both the husband and wife lose their attachment for family and home, the wife returns home to live under the care of her grown-up children and to remain aloof from family affairs. The husband then takes sannyas to render some service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the perfect system of civilization. The human form of life is especially meant for God realization. If one is unable to take to the process of Krishna consciousness from the very beginning of life, he must be trained to accept these principles at the fag end of life. Unfortunately, there is no training even in childhood, nor can one give up his family life even at the end. This is the situation with the city of Puranjana, figuratively described in these verses. Kalakanyapi bubhuje Puranjana puram balat yayapi bhuta purushah sadyo nissaratam iyat. Gradually, Kalakanya, with the help of dangerous soldiers, attacked all the inhabitants of Puranjana's city and thus rendered them useless for all purposes. All the inhabitants of Puranjana's city. Who are all the inhabitants of Puranjana's city? All of our senses, all of our faculties, all of our there's so much prana circulating in this body, and there are so many other living entities that make up this body. We're not alone in exactly the same way that we're not alone at Kumbh Mela. So in this body there are many, many living entities and we're not aware of them. But those who are controlling our senses, they're aware. Our senses are actually not controlled by ourselves. They're controlled by Krishna. And Krishna doesn't necessarily control he doesn't micromanage every aspect of our lives, as we sometimes might think. Once I was driving in America with another devotee. And in America, every so often you have stoplights. And when the light turns green, you go. And when the light turns red, you stop. So every single intersection, we were getting green, 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 green. So we were making all the green lights. No problem, don't have to stop. And the devotee said, Krishna's mercy, we're getting all the green lights. But in fact, Krishna has better things to worry about than micromanaging every tiny aspect of our existence. Shri Shri Gaurinitai, Shri Shri Krishna Balaram, Shri Shri Lalita Vishakaradha Shama Sundara Kijay. So we're actually living in this city. It's actually it's a metropolis. Just think about this. There is a system for waste management in every big city outside of India. In places like Gurgaon, where the multinationals that have now taken over governments worldwide have taken management of the city, they don't have any responsibility for the infrastructure to actually maintain the shiny new centers of commerce that they have built there. And so the result is that the trash is piling up in the streets. You get wonderful shiny glass and steel buildings, but there's garbage everywhere and the whole place smells like stool. So if even in an ordinary city you have so many, there's water department, there's electricity, of course in India we know. With every new skyscraper that goes up in Vrindavan, this problem is going to get worse. It's actually Krishna's mercy on us. Because we're asleep at the wheel regarding Srila Prabhupada's instructions, socioeconomic instructions about Varnashram Dharma. Therefore, Krishna's giving us a little nudge. And it just doesn't work here. No matter how hard you try to make it work, it just doesn't work. Because in fact, it doesn't work anywhere else either. We have less than 5% of the world population exploiting ruthlessly more than 50% of the world's resources. Devamrita Maharaj likes to point out that it would require to replicate the modern, American or European lifestyle worldwide, it would take the additional resources of 5 extra planet Earths in order to do that. It's not going to happen. What is going to happen is that they're going to come and knock down your gate when they want what you have, if you insist on taking it in that way. There's one quality that my older godbrother, the late Gopi Paramadhana Prabhu, had, which I have not heard a single person praise him for. That is that he was able to live just like a Brijavasi. He lived in a very, very simple way, very austere life, not distinguishable from that of the local residents here. It's a far cry from OMAX and other big productions that are going on. We saw one the other day, and just immediately it came to my mind, at least, that it just doesn't seem to be like simple living and high thinking. It doesn't seem like that, but maybe there's some way to... I don't know, but anyway, without getting too far afield here, the point is that we have cities, and cities are organized with all sorts of management. Everything is going on roughly in a smooth manner, unless there's too much corruption, like we have in India, of course, especially in certain places. But The idea is that we're not alone. It's a very fragile complex, almost we can say a metropolis, and so many living entities are involved. And at all three levels of existence, what are the three levels of existence? There is one Vaishnava philosopher, Sampradayacharya, Vallabhacharya. His whole philosophical system is based upon these verses from the second canto that talk about the adibhautic, adhidaivik, and adhyatmic levels of existence. We can look at our existence in these three ways. That is to say, the raw materials that we're working with, the controllers of those materials, and the exploiters of those materials. Those are the three levels of existence. Adibhautic, adhiatmic, and adhidaivik. We generally only talk about them in our system according to misery, because there are miseries on these three levels as well. But there's actually every other experience on those levels too, if you choose to see it, which is what the Bhagavatam actually does suggest there in the second canto. I believe it's chapter 10. So anyway, this is the first point. But the living entity who is conscious of fairly conscious, not entirely conscious, but for the most part conscious of the entire mind-body complex, that living entity has a hard time, eventually, every one of them. Unless he gets kicked out sadhya, immediately, then gradually these soldiers of Kalakanya, they attack. And they attack not only the soul inhabiting that body, the soul who is enlivening that body with consciousness, predominating in that body, but they attack all the inhabitants of that body so that you cannot do anything about it. When the prana refuses to circulate properly, Sridhar Swami, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and most others, they comment here, jadapannagena jina pranena palitam. This city is protected by an old serpent. Who is that old serpent? Anybody know? Who is the old serpent that's protecting Puranjana city? It's the life air, it's the prana. We don't even know about prana. In modern civilization, science and health professions and, I mean, nobody talks about this. It's not a day-to-day experience in most people's vocabulary, how prana is working, but it's so vital. If this serpent that is keeping us all alive becomes too much weak, then we have to die and cannot function. Then we have to die. So prana is circulating throughout the body. We don't know how. It's actually circulating throughout the universe. We're all enlivened by, mainly by the sun, by the moon, and by the wind. These are three powerful demigods. Soma, Agni, and Vayu. And they, according to Ayurveda at least, they are balancing all these systems that are cooperating to keep a human body alive and to keep a certain level of experience on the basis of one's karma working nicely. A well-oiled machine, as it were. So, when we get old, then it becomes a problem. And Prabhupada is talking here. At the fag end of life, when the invalidity, invalid. When invalidity of old age attacks a man, mainly he's talking about men here, isn't it? I mean, the whole Vedic literature is shot through with sexism. That's a given. We're not going to argue with that or deny it, but it's notable here that Prabhupada is addressing men, mainly because, and he's also talking about brahmacharya, because the vitality, the potency that a person has to keep this prana working nicely, it's very much enhanced if a man can retain his vital fluid, shukra, semen. Therefore, brahmachari training is important. Now, another thing here Prabhupada is saying is that when a boy becomes a young man, he marries between the ages of 20 and 25. Nowadays, they marry between the ages of 30 and 45. Isn't it? It's a general thing I've observed everywhere, especially among Indians. It seems like they just put it off as long as they can. In Mauritius, I think it was Mauritius, one of these countries, the husband, young man, he was married for about a year and he died of a stroke. Now he's left his wife. I mean, anyway. The idea is that when a person is married at the right age, he can immediately get strong, healthy sons. Because if a man has potency through self-control, then he has more... Evidently, it would seem it takes a lot more potency to produce a male child. That's the implication here. But at any rate, this is called kamya karma. You don't have to do it, but if you want to do it, you can have a son. And therefore, Prabhupada says here, it's essential to practice the system of brahmacharya if one wishes to beget a male child when one is married. However, when one reaches the age of 50, he should give up family life. And the system we know, that the man and the wife can become a little bit detached, maybe go to the holy places, settle in Vrindavan, perhaps render devotional service. And then the family affairs and business affairs and all these other material affairs, they can be turned over to the sons, who are by that time eager to move up in the world. This is the nature of young people, that when we are young, we are imbued, we're just infused with a spirit of limitless opportunity, and we have limitless potency, it would seem, with which to fulfill our aspirations. Therefore, they should be given the facility to do so. Now, I was reading in the light of the Bhagavata. It's not something that you hear quoted that much. But Prabhupada makes some very, very, very strong statements, and he directs them mainly at old politicians. He says, after the age of 50, one must retire from active external life and devote oneself to the culture of the human spirit, or cultivation of the human spirit. What does that mean? It means to study this section of the Bhagavatam and to understand how does this relate to my circumstance. Because I also have a city that I'm living in. That city is definitely going to be attacked by Kalakanya if we're not kicked out of the city through some coup d'etat before that. And this also happens. When I was in Dallas, Texas, about 20 years ago, there was a man from India, and he was living in a nice house. They all come to America to get that. And in those days, you could get that. Now America's kind of attacked by Kalakanya itself, it would seem. Historians generally note that most civilizations and empires, on an average, they last about how many years? Does anyone know? 250, 300. Ancient Greece or Rome was, these are exceptional. They don't generally last. In the history of this Kali Yuga, at least, it's going about 200 or 300 years only. Something to think about. One God brother of mine said that America's gas tank is empty and it's running only on fumes. Sometimes when you have an automobile and the petrol tank is empty, but there's enough gas fumes there to keep the thing running a little while. So that's a little bit, anyway. Where was I? In America, this man. So he's watching television around 10 o'clock at night. All the family, they have gone to bed already. Suddenly, someone knocks at the door. And he didn't know that in America, you don't answer your door after 9 o'clock at night. You don't want to do it. And neither did he have one of these little peepholes installed that almost every American has on their doors, because you definitely want to know who's out there. You never know who it is. And he didn't know either, because as soon as he opened the door, the last thing he saw and heard was the bang and the flash of a gun pointed right between his eyes. And he went down immediately dead. Then they came in, tied up everyone in the house, took everything they wanted, and left. So this is the idea that ek gole se sab samapt hua. That at any moment, Shankaracharya says, what is it? Or Govindadas Kaviraj also says, kamala dala jala jivana talamala. This life is tottering like a drop of water on a lotus leaf. So you may not even make it to old age. And if you don't, sometimes I think it's actually a blessing. Because I saw my mother, I took care of her for the last 5 or 6 years of her life, and you know, the memory goes, and what does that do to your psychology? There are different ways that different acharyas have translated or glossed this term here, nissadatam. Anybody know or can guess what does this word mean? Nissadatam. There's no, the sara is missing now. Yeah, sara means the essence. Right? So, Srila Prabhupada here has translated it as uselessness. That's a very good way to put it. Vamshidhara Acharya says, Nisaratam Nairbalyam, you've got no potency anymore. Nairba, there's no bala any longer. Vallabha Acharya says, Nisaratam Asamarthatam, you're incapable. What does that do to your psychology when you're incapable of everything? Does anyone here like to be incapable of anything? We all like to be very competent and strong and full of potency. But in old age, I was thinking the other a week or so ago because I had the flu. Old age is like having the flu, but you don't get over it. You know, when you've got a flu, you can't do anything. You just can't move and it's hurting everywhere and, you know, your whole life is disrupted. That's what it's like, except that you don't get better. This time you're not getting off. We get let off the hook every time, isn't it? When we get sick. Somehow it comes back together and okay, now I'm back to normal. But there's a new normal when you get old. And you don't get better from that. That's really suffering. It's not only physical suffering, it's mental suffering as well. People overlook this. And it's not only individual suffering, it also it imposes suffering on those who necessarily have to take care of you. I learned by hearing and also by experiencing that when you're the caregiver of an older person, you get burnt out very easily. And not necessarily from the care itself, but from the circumstances that surround it. Family dynamics are changed, especially if there's inheritance issues involved and so many things. So old age entails all of these things. And therefore it's said here that with the help of dangerous soldiers, Kalakanya attacked all the inhabitants of the city. All of them. So, Viraraghavacharya comments in this connection, Jara Vyadhadi Grastam Abhut. What happened? He became overwhelmed by Jara, characterized by vyadhi. Jara means old age, vyadhi means disease, and adi means etc. All the things that come along with old age. What does Shankaracharya tell us about this? He says, yavat vitto parishna sakta tavan nija parivaro raktaha. Your family members, they will remain attached to you as long as you are capable of providing sense gratification. Mainly in the form of money, especially here in India. You want to hear a story? It's very shocking. In South India, Kerala, sometimes the tourists, they go on boats in the backwaters of the, there's many rivers and lagoons there in Kerala, very heavenly sort of a place. So there was one family, they were going there for this purpose. They thought, let us have a nice vacation. Now, they had, the whole family was in the boat, the, you know, dada-dadi, the parents, the kids, the grandkids. So, the one little girl was dangling her arm in the water, just playing as children do. And nobody thought anything of it, until a crocodile grabbed onto her arm. And when crocodiles bite you, they grab on, they clamp down, they lock on, they don't let go. Is that right? You're from Florida, no? So, That's what they do. And so then it was a problem because, you know, what to do? The little girl is screaming and crying, and the whole vacation spirit is completely toast, and it's a huge nightmare, like hell. Instant hell. Sadya nissaratamiyat. So what did they do? Then the boatman was getting anxious, said, listen, this guy's not letting go. She's finished. If you don't do something now, then this boat is filling up with water. We're all going to be eaten like this. What are you going to do about it? Imagine the pressure of that decision. So what did the parents do? They had to sacrifice their little girl. Now, here's the real point that I'm making. I mean, that's heavy enough, but wait until the next part. What did they do before they threw the girl over? They took all the gold jewelry from her body. Therefore, I say, you know, Shankaracharya says, Yavad vitto parjana sakta tavan nija parivaro rakta. Your family will be attached to you as long as you represent income to them. Pashat jarjari dehe jivati. Later on, when you live in an old useless, here Prabhupada has described it as useless, or Vamshidhara says it's nairabalya, impotent, Vallabhacharya says asamartha, incapable. When you live in this sort of condition, vartam kopina prachati gehe, even in your own home, nobody will care to ask how are you doing. They won't even ask. They don't care. This is love. This is love in the material world. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada says, one must retire from active external life and development and devote oneself to the introspective culture of the human spirit. This is what it means, to understand that I am not this body first. We have to do this because we're going to get a very ugly experience when we get attacked by Kalakanya. If we don't prioritize this now, then it's very difficult later on. Or as Amone Poribe Laje, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, later on, if you don't worship Yashodasuta now, then later on you're going to have a hard time. So this is what it means. At least we have to cultivate self-realization. But even better than that, if we can move on beyond that and cultivate God-realization. Now, I'm going to continue paraphrasing this section of the Light of the Bhagavat that Prabhupada is very nicely, very in a heavy way, he's actually said. The retirement must be compulsory so that foolish old men will no longer disturb the peaceful progress of spiritual culture. Wow. I mean, every one of us is getting old, believe it or not. So we're going to have to process these instructions at some point. And Prabhupada talks about the Dhritarashtra tendency also that we all have. And particularly he's railing on the politicians who refuse to give up their office. And evidently Prabhupada is blaming them for so much social chaos because of that. Now, why is that? Let's see what he says next. The greatest enemies of progressive spiritual culture in human society are the old fossils of political parties who are blind themselves and lead other members of the younger generation and lead others in the same direction, he says. Then he goes on to say, members of the younger generation are not as stupid as the old politicians. This is verbatim. And therefore, by state law, the foolish politicians must retire by 50. There's a nice poem by Rudyard Kipling. I think it's entitled The Dead Statesman. And the implication is that we're reading his epitaph. So he says, I could not dig, I dared not rob, Therefore, I lied to please the mob. Now all my lies are proved untrue, and I must face the men I slew. What tales shall serve me here among mine angry and defrauded young? This is what Prabhupada is talking about. So there's another nice, we've already read this, but because it's very apropos, I think, I'll just go back to the last chapter. And in his purport to text number 20, Srila Prabhupada makes a very powerful conclusion there. He says, one should not wait for old age in order to become Krishna conscious. Due to the invalidity of old age, one cannot make progress in Krishna consciousness, however opulent he may be materially. We accumulate all of our money and we hoard it and we very carefully guard it. Nowadays, if you have any assets, you have to really guard them because there are jackals and wild animals all the time trying to get it out of you. Somehow or other, they figure out a way to do it legally. Anyway, but even if you manage to set yourself up in a nice way, Prabhupada says, you still cannot focus on Krishna consciousness when you're too old. You have to get it hardwired now, before that happens, because the only thing you're going to be able to run on is the fumes. The only thing you're going to be able to function with is the samskars that have been hardwired into your ship, so to speak. This is the implication. So this is what's happening here, and Prabhupada is praising the system of brahmacharya because it serves one well, at least in the male body. If one has retained his semen and not wasted it, then when one gets old, it's not so hard because it's vital in many ways. Anyway, so these are some things we can think about. This is the situation with the city of Puranjana figuratively described in these verses. Now, the detail is coming a little bit later. We're going to hear exactly what is this bodily situation that he's in. And then we can, by extrapolation, we can calculate for our own benefit what it is that we need to do, where we stand, what is our level of attachment or detachment. These are the important things. This is what it means when Prabhupada says that we should, especially here in Vrindavan, we should devote ourselves to the cultivation of the human spirit. To realize that we're not our body is not that easy to do. It's not very easy to do. Because we have to become, all we really have to do in Krishna consciousness is to accept whatever is favorable for Krishna's pleasure and reject whatever is unfavorable. But in order to do that, we've got to realize that we're not the body because we can't do it otherwise. And to realize that we're not our body, it's a lot to talk about. One Madhaji, very Krishna conscious elderly woman, told me the other day that she said, whenever whoever comes to see me, I ask them this question. I said, if you can have everything in your life, in your devotional service, in your devotional life, we're assuming that we're talking about devotees here, if you can have everything very nicely and all your desires fulfilled, and everything goes smoothly in your Krishna consciousness, or you can leave this world right now and go back to Godhead, which one would you choose? She said, less than 2%. 1% or less, they actually choose that I'm ready to go back to Godhead. If I'm surely going back to Godhead right now, I don't think I'm ready for that. And we don't know this until the body is attacked. Sadhya nissaratanyat. When it is instantly rendered useless, let's say by a stroke, and you can't remember how to tie your shoes, or you don't recognize your spouse anymore, these things happen. They happen to devotees also. It's not that because you become a devotee, you're freed from any kind of disturbance. No. Does anyone know who Lala Babu was? Prabhupada talks about Lala Babu in the Nectar of Devotion. He's citing Lala Babu as an example of Dhanavir, a great hero of charity. Lala Babu, during the Hastings administration here in India, was perhaps the wealthiest man in East India. He was fabulously wealthy, even more than Raghunath Das Goswami's family. I mean, so much money. He actually bought up half of Vrindavan just to preserve it from the kind of development that we see going on now, perhaps. And he built this famous temple next to Sri Rangji Mandir, Lala Babu Mandir, beautiful temple there. And he was doing so many things. He was very, used his money wisely. How did he leave this world? He was kicked in the head by a horse who was rearing. And just like that. Tamal Krishna Goswami, just like that. We don't know why. We don't know the ins and outs of all this. But it's not that a devotee is necessarily free from reverses like this. We may have to suffer tremendously. In fact, sometimes Krishna wants his advanced devotees to suffer more than others, and we see that. Those who are more advanced in the Bhagavatam, they do suffer, like the Pandavas, like the gopis. How many monkeys were killed in the battle with Ravana, and we never hear about them? Somebody had to fulfill that role. So we're all being used here. This is the point. Get out of the attitude of being an enjoyer and recognize that you are being used. Somebody sent me a cartoon about Facebook the other day. It showed two pigs talking to one another. And they say, isn't it great? Everything in this barn is paid for and they give us our prasadam and no problem. It was about Facebook. The implication is that you're not the consumer, you're the product. So in spiritual life, it's also like this. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur refers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the transcendental despot. Does everybody know what a despot is? A dictator, an autocrat, somebody who just exploits you for whatever he wants, and he's got no obligation to morality or anything else. He can do anything he wants. This is Mahaprabhu's prayer. So, how did I get on that point? I don't remember now. But the idea is that we are not these material bodies, and to realize that is not so easy, but unless we realize that, we cannot enter into this kingdom of prema. This is the point. Because we will not have... We get what we want. If we're not ready to go back to Godhead, then we make our choices accordingly, and at the end we suffer and we have to come back for another chapter. And Krishna's prepared to do that because it's according to us. Yathechasita Thakuru. He said, I'm not going to shove this down your throat, Arjun. If you want to do this, you can deliberate and you make your own decision, like a good parent does this, isn't it? Parents tell the kids, if you do this, then that's going to happen. If you do, now you decide. Good parents know this. So Krishna is also saying like this in Bhagavad Gita. So it's up to us. And komaram acharet prajno, it's stated in the seventh canto, that really the ideal thing is to begin at the earliest age, because you cannot begin this at old age. You can't even really go very far in old age. We have to build up some assets in our spiritual bank account while we can see the deities clearly. The other day a monkey stole my glasses. And while we can hear properly, I used to take my mother to the temple before she died, and she used to enjoy hearing the kirtan, and she tried to hear the lecture, but she couldn't understand anything she heard because the hearing was deteriorated. In all these ways. While we can do parikrama, do it. You're not going to be able to do it later. This is the idea. I'll stop here unless anybody has any questions or comments. Yes, Prabhuji. Well, here's the thing. Sometimes it's all relative. This is love. Love means reciprocation. It's a two-way street. We step towards Krishna, Krishna comes towards us. And it's totally relative, the extent to which this goes on. If we, commensurately, there's a nice verse in Padyavali, Rupa Goswami is saying, Nanopachara krita pujanam artha bandho premnaiva bhakta hridayam sukhavitrutam syat yavat kshirasi jatare jarha pipasa tavat sukhaya bhavate nunu bhakshyate yat. And there's a couple of ways you can interpret that verse, but one of them is, to the extent that you want Krishna to eat what you have offered to him, to that extent his hunger increases. If you don't really care, then he doesn't care either. He'll maybe look at it. And that's enough, of course. But if you want Krishna to eat what you offer and leave nothing behind on the plate, that's another matter. And that can happen. It's just up to us. So sometimes we know that Krishna, karmani nirdahati, he will burn off some of our karma. Sometimes he will let it go, if it's good for us especially. But we never know which one it is. We just don't know. So ultimately everything is Krishna's mercy, but usually the paradigm is mayadhyakshena prakati suyate sacharacharam. I've got all these agents working, 33 million of them working on my behalf. That's mid-level cosmic management. 33 million of them. All different kinds of devatas and upadevatas and whatnot. They're the ones who are controlling our senses, just like the sun. We can see by the grace of the sun, so many ways. This is the idea. So, you know, maybe it is true that Krishna is giving you green lights for something if you're some great devotee of some sort, that he's that concerned. I'm not going to say that. But in general, this is why we have spiritual masters. Because we're not really that much in touch with what Krishna is doing. But our spiritual master should be. If we've selected a bona fide spiritual master, then that the meaning of a bona fide spiritual master is that I accept that this person knows what Krishna wants, and he will tell me, and I believe it. That's Guru Nishtha. Is that clear? Anything else? Yes, Andranaja. If you've not realized that you're not your body, can you reach the clearing stage of chanting? You know, we were studying Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, text 11, the other day. Tesham evanukam partha mahamajnanajam tamaha nashiyami atyadi. And Prabhupada explains there in his purport, and the acharyas also explain in their purports, and reference this other verse, ananyashchintayanto mam yejana paripasate tesham nityabhyuktanam yogakshemam vahami. Krishna says that I will give him whatever he needs. I will preserve whatever he's, you know, whatever he should not lose. Even if we are not that advanced, Krishna will give us the understanding and will give us the guidance that we require to make that advancement if we are sincere. If we're two things that Prabhupada, if you study his letters, he emphasizes repeatedly. Two words, serious and sincere. And usually they go together. One has only to be sincere and serious. And if that's the case, then like the Brahman who was studying Bhagavad Gita, even though he was illiterate, he actually could not fulfill the order of his spiritual master. Just like we may feel that we cannot fulfill the orders of our spiritual master. But if we are sincerely and seriously trying to do that, it's good enough. Prabhupada said you don't have to be very advanced. You have to have no motive to be a pure devotee. That's what it means. And if we are on that level of sincerity and crying for Krishna through the holy name, then we will get there. How else is it going to happen? What adhikar do we have for gyan in this Kali Yuga? We don't even have adhikar for karma in this Kali Yuga. What to speak of anything else? Is that okay? That's one answer at least. There may be other answers someone else can. Okay? Anything else? And then, oh, Mataji. but loud because we can't hear. I'm very sorry, but I cannot understand a word you're saying. Can you speak up?
I have indulged in sense gratification in the past before I became a devotee.
Yeah. You know, you're very lucky in that way because many of us have no guilt about that at all. That's the difference between a dharmic person and a poppy.
But the pure thought of the sense gratification still have such a strong impression in my mind.
Yeah.
I couldn't let it go, so what to do?
Well, this is a very, very big question, and it's a very essential and important question. It's one of the aspects of what constitutes a serious inquiry into the cultivation of the human spirit, as Prabhupada said. A major part of realizing that we're not our body is coming to recognize what is samskar and how does it sew us up in this material existence. So that's what you're talking about. The impressions that we have from our past experiences, not only in this life, but even from previous lives, and we don't know how many billions there were, those things are not going to go away that easily. We can't expect everything to go away just overnight. Even though we do have the most powerful process, and even though we can see that even a person from a sinful background can become freed from so many anarthas just in a few years, it really is amazing. I don't know that you're going to find any other process that is so effective as Krishna consciousness. There's a couple of things here. Number one, Rupa Goswami and others have explained in Nectar of Devotion and elsewhere, that the very power of bhakti is so strong that even the most sinful person should dhyanti tasmai prabhavishnave namaha. A person from any sinful background can be purified just by the power of executing devotional service, especially in the association of a pure devotee. Tad joshanat ashwapavarga varshmani. In good association, hearing and chanting about Krishna and the inspiration and the guidance and the faith that is produced from hearing from a more advanced devotee, that propels us very far. And these activities of hearing the Bhagavatam, performing Sankirtana, living in Mathura or a temple, worshipping Tulasi, etc. These essential activities of devotional service are so powerful that they can carry us beyond the influence of these samskaras. We just have to be patient, and we have to be determined, and we have to be enthusiastic, and the other things that Rupa Goswami mentions in his Upadeshamrita. So that's one answer, but another answer is a little more scientific and philosophical, and being of that mindset, I'd like to emphasize it. That is that if we very carefully study this topic of samskar formation and how it is that the living entity transmigrates from one body to another through the vehicle of the subtle body, then we can begin to appreciate why we're told to do certain things and are told to avoid other things. Every injunction of dharma in the Smriti Shastras is predicated on the understanding of Sankhya principles, which are ultimately meant to extricate us from the bodily concept of life. Once we understand that, then they no longer become the enemy. They no longer become a problem or a hassle or something impractical. Because what it means to be sincere about spiritual life is that I'm prepared to do anything before the big door slams shut again and my opportunity is removed, or before I start losing my mind and my senses and my money and my friends and family due to the invalidity and uselessness of old age. This is what we have to do. To study how it is that we transmigrate from one body to another is to disassemble the subtle body that we have accumulated over many, many millions of lifetimes. And the fast track for doing that is to very attentively and as much as possible without offense to chant Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. We cannot overestimate the power of this mantra in disassembling all these illusions. That's what it means. Cheto Dharmana Marjanam. All the misconceptions, all the desires, all the ugly, dirty things that are within our hearts that you're talking about, they're all removed through chanting Hare Krishna. Now, that depends on the determined effort of the individual to chant with that degree of devotion. There's another way that it can be done, but it takes a lot longer, and that's called sadhana dharma. And it's usually manifest in the form of Varnashram Dharma, as I was mentioning. Varnashram Dharma simply means a culture that is based on the injunctions of the Shastra. And the ultimate point of those injunctions is to gradually elevate us into Sattva Guna. And from Sattva Guna, when we can see straight and think straight, then we can practice Krishna consciousness the way I'm emphasizing here, through chanting the holy name purely. So that's what something that Prabhupada actually did instruct us to do. Especially in his later years, he gave roughly 80% of his instructions on that topic in the last few years he was here. He took it very seriously and wanted us to do something about it. So that's a secondary measure, which is also very, well, it's effective in that it's been ordered by our founder Acharya. So we should not neglect that. It's not extrinsic. Is that okay? Yeah. Okay, it's getting late, so thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.